Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes.
I'm Stephen Sachs, owner of Solutions to Results, a consulting firm that helps CPA practices and organizations in the areas of communication, culture, education, and training. Our guest today is Gary Copins. Gary is an internationally recognized expert speaker and author on enterprise and corporate performance management improvement methods and business analytics. He has been a consultant with Deloitte, KPMG, and SAS, the large analytics software company. He is the founder of the North Carolina-based firm, Analytics-Based Performance Management. Gary is also the author of Performance Management, Integrating Strategy Execution Methodologies, Risk and Analytics, and Predictive Business Analytics, both published by John Wiley and Sons. Welcome, Gary.
Pleasure to be here, Stephen.
You've authored books and articles about enterprise and corporate performance management. Can you briefly describe what EPM and CPM are?
EPM and CPM are basically synonymous because public sector people don't like the word C, but they're really the same thing. There is confusion and lack of consensus about what it is. Many think it's a process and a system. It's actually the integration of multiple methods. And let me just kind of like walk you through some of the methods, because many of these methods have been around for decades, some of them even before computers. So, you know, why is there interest in them? The first one is executive frustration with strategy implementation. They're pretty good at formulating strategy. Their big frustration is failure to actually execute the strategy. We can talk a little bit later. That involves methods like the strategy map and the balanced scorecard, which people have heard of. Second pressure is increase in accountability. Today, there is no place to hide. You know, you will be measured. You will be monitored. Doesn't necessarily mean employees or managers' jobs are at risk, but it could adversely affect their salary increases or job promotions. Another pressure is more rapid decision-making. Unlike a few months ago or years ago when you could test and learn, have meetings and conference rooms with your supervisor, today, people are on the phone, go or no go, yes or no. They need to make that decision in near real time. They almost wish an executive was sitting next to them on the phone and say, well, you know the strategy, what should I answer? Fourth is mistrust of the management accounting system for accuracy. And this should not be a surprise. Many of the managers do not trust the management accounting system. I'm not talking about the external financial reporting for regulatory and statutory reporting. You know, that's basically for the government and for the investment community. I'm talking about the internal management accounting. And of course, the issue there has to do with allocations. The managers suspect that the accountants are basically allocating all of those expenses like spreading butter across bread. So they're concerned about that. A fifth pressure is poor customer value management. Today, customers are the source of value creation for shareholders and owners. And therefore, what managers really need is to answer questions like, what types of customers are most attractive to retain, to grow, to win back and acquire? Which types are not? What they really need is information like a profit and loss statement by each customer below the product gross profit margin line, including channel distribution, selling, marketing expenses. And most of the accountants don't do that. Sixth one is budgeting, the contentious budgeting. I think the annual budgeting process is broken. That probably caught a lot of people's attention. But that begs the question, what was the purpose of a budget in the first place? And can we basically replace it in some way? And we may talk about budgeting a little later in the webinar. Another one, which may not apply to everybody, is dysfunctional supply chains. You know, most customers view their supplier as the enemy. Oh, let's just basically see if we can negotiate lower prices. We put them out of business, so what? We'll get another supplier. That's got to stop. It's got to be a marriage. Supply chains are competing against other supply chains for share of wallet and purse. And then finally, unfulfilled return on investment promises from large IT systems like enterprise resource planning systems or customer relationship management systems. And I think if you ask any chief information officer or IT director 2 to 3 years into the implementation of a large RP system, how confident are you that the ROI met or is meeting or exceeding what the software salesman sold you on, 3 years ago, I think most of them will be hard pressed. That does not mean you should not implement those ERP and CRM systems. You have to. but they produce a lot of data, but not necessarily information. You basically convert data into information. And so what the EPM and CPM methods do is they convert that data into the ROI like seeds from the ground. So Stephen, if you take all of those eight, you put them all together, that's what's led to interest in at EPM and CPM.
Well, what essentially makes an effective EPM-CPM system?
Well, first you got to have the data, and you got to have basically good methods, and then this is where the systems come involved. I said that EPM is not a system. It's really when you integrate them all together seamlessly, where they're interacting with each other, they do become a system. But they ultimately really need pretty good, high-quality source data, and they need to produce the facts. Because remember this, and I tell everybody, in the absence of facts, anybody's opinion is a good one. In the absence of facts, anybody's opinion is a good one. But usually the biggest opinion wins, which is the opinion of the boss or the boss of the boss. So to the degree they're making decisions on gut feel or intuition or misleading and flawed information, which is what's the problem in management accounting, the organization's at risk.
Well, you know, you talk about supply chain and distribution and other financial factors. So is EPM-CPM limited to what we'll say the CFO organization, or does it integrate or have any relationship in such areas as marketing, sales, or operations?
Absolutely. Another misconception, everybody thinks, oh, EPM is a CFO initiative with a bunch of dashboard dials. No, it's much broader. It's really about the line managers. That's my desire. I'm 71 years old, but I feel like I'm 41. My career is over. Right now, it's pretty much a vocation. I want to train and inspire people like I'm doing here. And so the CFOs need to realize that they have to serve their line managers, marketing, selling, distribution, and so forth. It's all about giving them better information so they can have the insights to make better decisions. And I want to clarify something. You know, you mentioned about supply chain. You know, I learned that 8 out of 10 jobs in the United States do not make products, only 2. So all of this universally applies to service organizations, banks, insurance companies, travel agencies. These methods are universal principles. So it's not just about, oh, this is for manufacturing. No, it's for any organization.
Well, that's good to know. I appreciate that you elaborated on that. So, you know, it's interesting. You have an industrial engineering background, and your early focus was on operations, strategy, development, and analytics. So what led you to your involvement with the accounting profession?
Yeah, well, I did in 1971, I got my industrial engineering and operations research degree from Cornell University. I then did go to Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management for my MBA. Early in my career, and I think careers have a lot to do with luck and circumstances than being smart and competent, I had a lucky break. I wound up being a division controller for one of the FMC Link Belt divisions in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I was in that role for 3 years. And then I had an opportunity when the manager on the factory floor, the operations manager, was a good friend, was being promoted. And he said, Gary, if you really want to learn what business is all about, get out of that bean counting chair upstairs, come down and run this factory. And I did that. And what I learned is I then had to eat the accounting data that I'd been feeding as the controller. I found much of that information to be at best useless and at worst dysfunctional and misleading. And that was a real wake-up call to me to know the difference between internal management accounting for insights and decision-making and the externals, costing and reporting for financial, statutory, regulatory reporting. I then went on to Deloitte. And basically, because I had this operations background and a accounting degree or accounting background, they just kept me in the CFO spot. And I haven't left that CFO spot since. I like to say to people, though, I'm an engineer masquerading as an accountant.
Okay.
And you should think like an engineer.
The words to the wise. That's interesting. So you mentioned 3 items, strategy, execution, failure. Flawed measures of costs and profit products, service lines and customers, and the third thing, poor budgeting. Can you briefly describe how EPM-CPM methods resolve these issues?
Well, now we're actually diving into the actual techniques that are in these various, you know, methods. So for the first one, the strategy map and the balanced scorecard, if you Google it, you know, designed by Professor Robert S. Kaplan of the Harvard Business School. And I was fortunate. I got trained by Professor Kaplan with KPMG. He had a contract there in activity-based costing. That basically develops the KPIs, the key performance indicators. And it's a very powerful way, because I said earlier, one of the pressures is the executive's frustration with strategy implementation failure. They're good at formulating strategy, or they'll bring in a high-end consulting firm. You know, their frustration is failure to execute. There's empirical evidence, Stephen. There's a executive recruiting firm in Chicago that monitors the involuntary turnover of CEOs in North America. It's increasing every year. I think post-Enron, board of directors basically are no longer patient with the CEO. If they don't basically execute the strategy, they're out of there. So that method helps identify the KPIs, and I could go deeper about it with the strategy map and objectives and so forth. It's all about aligning the behavior of the employees and managers with the strategy of the executives. For the profitability, you know, you got to go to activity-based costing. And I know it's got such a bad reputation from the early 1980s and 90s, the consultants over-designed the models way beyond diminishing returns and extra accuracy. So they were too complicated, too complex. They didn't work. Everybody says, oh, ABC doesn't work. No, it's just standard. It's just basically full absorption costing done correctly. And there are really quicker ways to basically right-size the model. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just, you know, this is management accounting information. You know, external reporting, you get those numbers wrong, you go to jail. Management accounting, you get the numbers wrong, you don't go to jail. So, you know, it's okay to have it roughly right. We want to just get good information. For the budgeting, what's happening there is we've got to move away from all of these, if you will, cost center spreadsheets that the accountants and give to the managers, and they fill them out January to December, every line item, including paper clips, you know, and then someone consolidates them to the top. That really isn't really the way to go. The way to go is really understand all of these unit cost consumption rates. This is where you think like an engineer. Forecast the volume and mix of the products or service lines that are coming at the future. Multiply those quantities back times the unit cost rates to solve for the level of capacity, number of employees and types of employees, and spend with suppliers. It's really modeling. It's not T accounts and journal entries, that kind of stuff. So that's a real quick overview about how you can basically pursue those three of the eight examples with methods and techniques that are under the corporate performance management umbrella.
How can business analytics enhance EPM and CPM methods? Can you provide some examples of that?
Yeah, well, first, these methods that I've been describing with you, they're powerful in and of themselves. When you embed analytics into them, you turbocharge them. You make them even more powerful. Now, an example would be on the strategy map, which I talked about. You know, the way that thing works is you have these key performance indicators. There's four perspectives. You go from learning and growth and innovation to the process improvement to customer retention financial. But so you have this really this thread, these linkages of KPIs. But when people are defining KPIs, they sometimes don't really know what they're doing. And so you can use a technique called correlation. You can look at, let's say, the last 24 months, 2 years, 24 months of KPIs, and how the KPI goes up or down and its impact on the next KPI that it influences. Because this is kind of like, you know, elephants in the circus, you know, trunk. And if it's poor correlation, it means that's not a particularly good KPI. So correlation is a technique to validate the quality of the KPIs that we've selected for a company. Kind of makes the strategy map, which most people do on a PowerPoint, into a scientific laboratory. You kind of look like a scientist. Other methods, other statistical methods are regression. I mentioned correlation, segmentation, clustering, association. I know many of the people listening to me, you took those courses in college, you just wanted a passing grade and get the heck out of there. Well, sorry, it's here, it's back. Data analytics, data science, you know, it's in. The good news is you don't need to go to your attic or basement and brush off your old college textbook, but you do need skill sets in your organization that are capable, you know, of doing these. Another quick example, which really tricky, it's not that used a lot, is probabilistic budgeting. In other words, most people, when they do any of these projections, it's a single point. But if you basically said, well, what about worst case, best case? Or maybe two to the left on worst case, or three to the left on best case, three to the right, best case, and then the case, that's seven. Well, if I've got like maybe seven key variables that are going to be part of my budget, I've got seven times seven, 49. I can get a distribution bell-shaped curve because the computer can compute all that and basically see 49 different combinations. What's if all seven went bad? So I'll stop there. The examples are using these deep analytics in a method.
Can these methods or these approaches, can they also apply to CPA firms in terms of looking at, you know, profitability and ways of diminishing costs? How might that apply to professional practice?
Absolutely. All of these methods can apply, you know, and to process organizations as well, government organizations as well. They're universal. You know, rules are many, principles are few. Most of these things rely on principles like speed of light or gravity. You can't, you know, change them. In the commercial world, let's talk about customer profitability. The key there is most organizations have high maintenance customers and low maintenance customers. And I'll get to clients because for those CPA firms, think of when I say customer, you need to think client. So back to the commercial firm, examples of high maintenance customers, always changing schedule, never buying standard, always special, always calling help desk, always returning goods. Low maintenance customers, you love them, you know, only buy standard, never change schedule, never call help desk, never return goods. If those two customers bought the same volume, same mix, same price, they're not equally profitable because the high maintenance one is really, really eroding a lot of work. So now let's switch this over to a CPA firm. You know, on an annual basis, they have to look at basically their client, their revenues, their billable hours, and all of that stuff, you know. And basically, if they use activity-based costing principles, if you will, because they're all based on work activities, it's all verb, noun, grammar, process, invoice, you know, correct the default, they would get the visibility, what differentiates, what causes high client profit, high, very profitable clients from low profitable clients. And that's the real purpose of management accounting. It's to generate questions. I always tell people, you know, the accounting information doesn't give you answers. It gives you questions to ask. And with those questions, then you can investigate.
What are some of the barriers and obstacles that slow the adoption of organizations to implement or apply EPM and CPM methods?
Well, you're onto a question that really is bothersome to me. This adoption rate for all these methods is agonizingly slow. It's really, it's pathetic. I get frustrated by it. About 5% of organizations where activity-based costing applies don't. They still spread the butter, meaning they allocate indirect expense on number of units produced, sales dollar, labor hour, and all violates the causality principle, which is what's so key in modeling. The barriers have nothing to do with the systems and method. They're all behavioral. The biggest one is resistance to change. People love the status quo, you know? Only babies like change. Other barriers, fear of knowing the truth or other departments knowing the truth, fear of being measured, fear of being held accountable, weak leadership. There I even put it on the table. These can have nothing to do with software systems or method. It's all behavior. And if you really want to basically overcome these barriers, you almost have to think like a psychologist or a sociologist. But the problem is, if I was to have the audience that I could see, I say, raise your hands. How many of you degrees in sociology or psychology? Like none, you know, you're all Newtonians. What I mean by Newtonians is you think like Isaac Newton. To you, the world's a big machine. Give me the levers, pulleys, dials. You know, you got to be somewhat Darwinian. You know, it's an organism, sense and respond. So change management, behavioral change management is really key to accelerate the adoption rate of these methods.
Well, shifting gears, what will be the impact of robotic process automation and artificial intelligence in the CPA profession?
Big. Big. It's going to eliminate a lot of jobs, not just in the audit, but even transactional things like payroll, clerks, invoicing, purchase orders. And it's going to happen sooner than may people think. In fact, a suggestion I tell everybody is go to YouTube. It's a 15-minute video called Humans Need Not Apply. Four words, humans need not apply. So the audit is basically going to be not sampling, it's going to be 100% because artificial intelligence, and there are software vendors out there. I know their names. If you people want to email me later, can I give my email address? Or maybe it's
absolutely,
you know, it's gkokins, C-O-K-I-N-S at garykokins.com. That's my website also. Those jobs are going to go away. And when it comes to the clerks, the way it works is the computer, basically the artificial intelligence, watch the keystrokes, you know, for a while, and then it says, out of the way, you be the co-pilot, I'm going to take it from here. Occasionally, there'll be an anomaly or an exception, and the clerk will have to get back in, fix it, but the computer will remember it. So
you're essentially talking about low cognitive tasks, repetitive in nature.
Well, manual stuff, but boy, even some of the sophisticated stuff, you know, with natural language processing, you know, for example, you know, it can look at financial results, numbers, and basically turn that into a boardroom report with the language. That's going on in sports right now. People think in USA Today sports magazine that's being written by a sports writer. No, that thing is looking at the box score, you know, which they have all of the information batter by batter, pitch by pitch, and it's writing, it's scripting it. So the sports writer is now becoming a copy editor. It's the same thing. But here's the point about the CPA firms. They have to move to advisory services. They want to continue to have their revenue stream. You know, they've got to be able to basically help their clients implement the same methods that I've been talking. And if people are interested, that's what I enjoy doing now. I know how to train CPA firms how to implement these methods, not with months and years, although you may like the billable hours, but much more quickly using techniques called rapid prototyping with iterative remodeling. It's like piloting, but it's a really fast way with workshops with people in the room. And here's the point. If you can get your client what these methods in a relatively quick time, it's going to generate so much shock and fear and questions that you as a CPA firm will get add-on work. That's how the big Accentures and the like, that's how they make their money. It's all add-on work. They get the client, they do something, get more and more and more, you continue on forever. So I welcome training. I call it knowledge transfer, master to apprentice, the CPA firms in increasing their advisory services offerings.
Well, because CPM and EPM methods may be foreign to CPAs and CPA firms, what advice would you give for firms to successfully implement CPM and EPM, first for their clients and then for their own firms?
I'm very big on pain questions. You know, Socrates basically taught, you know, and I'm Greek American, incidentally, from Chicago, go Cubs, go Bears. You've got to have a list, and I have my list. If you go to my website homepage, you've got to start asking whoever you want to change some really painful questions like, do we know where we make or lose money reasonably accurately? You know, do our managers understand the strategy, the executives? Are we measuring the right things? I mean, I can list 10 more of those. They're all meant to be what's called FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, to create that sort of, ooh, I don't know what the answer is. Oh, I'm uncomfortable. Once they're uncomfortable, that is the lead in to basically say, well, you know, I have some techniques here. I've got this lifeline, this lifeboat that basically can resolve the issue that you're talking about. And that's where these rapid prototyping, because if their next reaction is, well, I've heard about that, but I think it takes 6 months to a year and it's too complicated and so forth, then you can basically, no, that's a misunderstanding that you have. we have techniques that we can put these methods in for you in 3 to 4 weeks, good enough for you to basically get insights and start making decisions and start being more competitive against your competitors.
Is there a particular size firm that could easily adopt these methods? Is it relegated to the larger firms? What about the mid-size firms?
I get asked that question all the time. My standard answer is 25 employees. If you got 25 or more employees, not 500, not the, all this, you know, what millions of dollars in sales, you have 25 employees. First of all, when it comes to cost accounting, the majority of them are going to be indirect or in selling, marketing, or sales. So you would still need the activity-based costing to basically still get to the understanding the true cost of your products, service lines, and so forth. When it comes to strategy execution, they've got to understand the strategy. So you've got to get measures. That's where the KPIs come into play. You know, you get what you measure. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. If you can't manage it, you can't improve it. So very small organizations can use all of these methods. And people can say, well, what about software? Oh, man, well, it's tough to do any of this stuff in Excel, but there are some commercial software vendors that are very low price. This is not always the big boys, millions of dollars for the licenses. So it's all doable.
What resources can viewers of this webcast access to learn more?
Well, I'm very active with the Institute of Management Accountants, although I'm involved with the AICPA and SEMA. In fact, there are 20, their headquarters of the AICPA is 20-minute drive down the road. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, in Durham. So I know they're, Ash Noah, I'm dropping names here, Ken Witt, part of the CGMA program. But the Institute of Management Accountants, and I'm going to give you their website. Boy, there's a lot of resources there. A lot, if you search my name there, you'll see a lot of my articles. So their website is www.imanet.org. And, you know, you don't have to get a CMA necessarily, but enough.
Well, thank you, Gary. I appreciate you sharing all your wisdom today in the area of EPM and CPM. And I think this is probably an introduction to some of the more advanced stuff.
Finish on this. I think in the past, the best leaders and best executives had the best answers. Today, I think that's the case. Today, I think the best leaders and best executives have the best questions. There is too much volatility. There's too much uncertainty. There's too much complexity for them to rely on their gut feel or intuition or so-called sixth sense or the types of answers they gave earlier in their career that got them promoted to the top. They need to create a culture of investigation and discovery and tolerance for making mistakes as long as you learn from those mistakes. So I just kind of end on that. It's kind of, I'm not a leadership expert, but that's just, when I look back at my career, I'm seeing the best leaders that I've seen in the last decade are those ones that ask questions, don't say, oh, I know the answer and mandate it.
Thank you very much today again, Gary, and I look forward to working with you on future shows.
It was a privilege. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you. Take care now.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.